stand if you are running for office so we can thank you and recognize you for carrying this fight into our communities. We are in this together.
You're listening to Pacifica's live coverage of the Green Party's National Convention. We are running a little bit late. The speeches are running late, so we're going to take our break now for stations to identify themselves. Please remember to support your local station, your affiliate, your Pacifica network founding member, their five stations, and all of the other affiliates that are listening. Join us. Stay with us.
You are listening to live coverage of the Green Party National Convention in Houston, Texas, from Pacifica Radio on your local community radio station. Community radio brings you voices of ordinary people trying to make changes at the grassroots. It is independent, people-powered radio, and it deserves your support.
Radio is a way of getting the word out to people who can't get it from commercial radio, which has all but withered away and become unlistenable. And they can't get it from religious broadcasters who have a very narrow, distorted perspective when it comes to news events. And they can't get it from television, which has been dumbed down. And they can't get it from newspapers that are dying off. So community radio is an extremely important means of getting people the information they need to make judgments about news and public affairs and to have entertainment options that aren't provided by giant chains of non-local broadcasters.
So you're the balloon. You've got that helium.
We'll return in a moment to the live coverage of the Green Party National Convention in Houston with your host, Mark Babawi, brought to you by Pacifica Radio. And don't forget to support your local community radio station.
The radio station is going to give us a chance to talk, a chance to respond when negative things happen in our community, talk about what kind of future we want.
So there's a lot of work to be done as far as problems that we are facing right now as American citizens as a whole. This radio station would help out a great deal to get a platform started and where we could hopefully bring people in from all over the state to come in and sit down and try to come to some type of solution.
That is here today. And I want to thank Yane Ndogo in particular. Yane, give a wave wherever you are for helping us move to that higher place together where we cannot be stopped. Thank you, sister. We moved together in Philadelphia, and we merged our campaigns in rally after rally, growing stronger by the hour. The power of this movement was clear, especially during our power rally at FDR Park. Who was there? Raise your hand if you were there. Because it was not only us, and it was a sea of people as far as my eye could see. When nature erupted in thunder and lightning to say there is a big change coming. And as the heavens opened up and it poured down around us, we sought shelter because we were there inside of this little lightning rod of a tent out in the middle of this park, and the police said, hurry up, go underneath that underpass. So we just moved the rally, and we continued under the underpass in the lightning and the thunder and the rain because we cannot be stopped. So here we are in this movement for justice and democracy that is sweeping the planet. From living wage campaigns to our fossil fuel blockades and the fight to end mass incarceration and to cancel student debt and to restore the rights of immigrants and indigenous people and LGBTQ and women and disability rights across the globe. We are part of a movement that is rising up like we have not seen for generations because we are facing an unprecedented crisis that demands transformational solutions and a new way forward based on democracy, justice, and human rights, and that will not come from corporate political parties funded by predatory banks, war profiteers, and fossil fuel giants. It will come from us, from we the people. Mobilized in broad social movements with an independent political voice, because as Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, it never will. We will be that demand. As Ajamu was saying, we're told it's a recovery, but in fact, it is still an emergency. Those good jobs we lost have been replaced by part-time, low-wage, temporary, insecure jobs. A generation of young people is locked into predatory student loan debt. Black lives are on the firing line. Immigrants face mass deportation. Wars for oil are blowing back at us with a vengeance. And the climate meltdown threatens civilization as we know it in our lifetimes. While the super rich party on, richer than ever, and the political elite that serve them are making things not better, but worse as they inflict austerity on everyday people while they squander trillions of our dollars on Wall Street bailouts, on tax favors for the wealthy, and on wars that know no end. So we are in revolt. And the good news they don't want you to know is that we actually have the power to turn this around the minute we stand up with the courage of our convictions. Because we not only have the vision and the values of the American people that we reflect and that we lift up, but because we actually have the numbers to win the day. As you may know, there are 42 million young people and not so young people who are locked into predatory student loan debt. That is a winning plurality of the presidential vote, right there. And there is only one place that those votes can go, and you are looking at it. It is the Stein-Baraka campaign. It's about time we bailed out the students. We bailed out the crooks on Wall Street who crashed the economy with their waste, fraud, and abuse. It's time to bail out some of the key victims of that abuse, a generation of young people. We have the power Don't let them tell you for a minute that we don't. Just go talk to a millennial who's in debt and let them know. And let them let each other know, because they are the self-mobilizing demographic, if there ever was one. We also have the power to fix the other things that ail us. And by the way, ending student debt, canceling it, is our way forward. This is the gateway issue. Because who is it that actually leads the way forward on transformational change? Whether it's the immigrant rights movement, whether it is the Black Lives Matter, or the climate justice movement, or the peace movement, or the women's, or the LGBTQ movement. It has always been the younger generation that leads us forward. We need to liberate the younger generation for all of our sake, not just for their sake, it's for all of us. And in liberating them, which, by the way, is my first priority when we turn the White House into a green house and make the world a safer place, my first priority is to liberate that generation who can then take us forward on all the other issues we are fighting for justice. That means an emergency jobs program that will also solve the emergency of climate change, a Green New Deal that will create 20 million jobs, that will create 100% clean, renewable energy by 2030. And that will create an immediate ban on all new fossil fuel infrastructure the day we take office. We will create healthcare as a human right through a Medicare for All system. We will make public higher education free. It pays for itself. We have news for the bean counters. For every dollar of taxpayer money we put into public higher education, we get back $7 in return. This doesn't cost us, this benefits us. There is no excuse not to have it now. We support the disabled members of our community to ensure that they have full support, the treatments they need, the housing, the health care, and the jobs to enable them to be fully contributing members of our society and to respect their dignity. We will revive public education and fully fund it and ensure that our young people come to school ready to learn. That means healthy. That means nourished with healthy food, not in food deserts. And that means free from poverty, the biggest obstacle to education that exists. And we will end high-stakes testing, which is an obstruction to education, particularly for challenged learners. And we will put an end to the school-to-prison pipeline. And we will end the closing of schools because they are poor or because they are Latino or in communities of color. We will support those schools, not shut them down. We will fund them. We will provide them with the real tools of education that they deserve. That is small classroom sizes. This is not rocket science about how to educate kids. We will provide them with enriched curriculum. That means music and arts and recreation and community engagement. We will do for our kids what the advocates and leaders of so-called education reform are doing for their kids. They are not sending their kids to schools with high-stakes testing. A couple other quick mentions, because we're almost out of time. We will create a welcoming path to citizenship for our immigrant residents who are leading the way for just and sustainable and prosperous communities. We are all immigrants on this bus. If you were not brought here on a slave ship or your land was not stolen, everyone else here is an immigrant. And we will stop. We will stop the deportations. We will stop the deportations, the detentions, and the night raids, which are a national scandal. While the Republicans have become the party of hate and fear-mongering, the Democrats are the party of deportation, detention, and night raids. We are the alternative for a just and welcoming path to citizenship. And the other thing we will do to fix the immigration crisis is to stop causing it in the first place. We say to Donald Trump, we don't need no friggin' wall. We just gotta stop invading other countries. How about that? A couple other quick ones. We can end the scourge of racist violence and brutality, not only in policing, but in our courts and in our prisons and in the economy at large. And we can start by ensuring that every community has a police review board so communities control their police, not police control the community. And we will ensure that every community has access to an investigator so that all cases of death in the custody of police are investigated, not just the few that get a special thumbs up from Washington and the Department of Justice. And we call for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission so we can get to the bottom of this crisis of racism and to provide reparations to acknowledge the enormous debt owed to the African American community for the unimaginable price that they paid in building this country and sustaining our economy for generations while they were denied dignity and freedom. And we will end the assault on our privacy, on freedom of the press, on the free internet. We will end the war on whistleblowers. We will free the political prisoners. And that includes Leonard Peltier, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Chelsea Manning, Julian Assange, Edward Snowden, Jeffrey Sterling, and Edward Pinckney. And finally, we will create a foreign policy based on international law, human rights, and diplomacy, not on military and economic domination, which has been a catastrophic failure. We must abandon that policy. The American people deserve to know the truth about these wars. Since 9/11, they have cost us $6 trillion when you include the health care expenses of our wounded veterans. $6 trillion comes down to an average of $75,000 per American household for wars that have not made us safer, that have only increased the terrorist threat, that have created failed states, and have created mass refugee migrations that are tearing apart the Middle East and Europe. We say no to those wars. We call for a new. It's just unthinkable that they want to do more of this same catastrophically failed policy, and that's why we need to be on the debate stage so we can tell the truth about this. So we have a new kind of offensive for the Middle East. It's called a peace offensive in the Middle East. And it starts with a weapons embargo, since we are providing the majority of weapons to all combatants and to all sides. We can shut down the flow of weapons to the Middle East. We can also shut down the flow of funding, which is coming largely from our allies who have been partners with us in this, what shall we say, schizophrenic war on terror. Because with one hand, starting back in Afghanistan, where we and the Saudis created this great idea of the global terrorist enterprise that was created in order to help the Mujahideen fight against the Soviet Union. Well, this has come back to bite us in a very big way. And it's time to shut the whole enterprise down. Because with one hand, we and our allies are fighting it, but with another hand, we and our allies have been funding it, training it, and arming it, according to even Hillary Clinton herself, whose leaked memos from the State Department revealed that in Hillary Clinton's estimation, the Saudis are still the major funder of Sunni jihad forces around the world. We started this. We can shut it down. That is our answer to ISIS and to terrorism. You know, hold on to your hat, folks, because we are in a whirlwind right now, a whirlwind that is way bigger than any of us. We have a job to do. We have a role to play that will not be played by anybody but us. We are the ones we've been waiting for. When they tell us to, you know, get out of the way because we're standing in the way of the lesser evil, you know, the answer to that is that this politics of fear, which we've been told to bow down to, has only delivered everything we were afraid of. All those reasons. We were told to vote for the lesser evil because we didn't want the offshoring of our jobs, the meltdown of the climate, the massive bailouts for Wall Street, the expanding prison state, the attack on our civil liberties and on immigrant rights. All those things we didn't want is exactly what we got by allowing ourselves to be silenced and letting a lesser evil speak for us. Remember, when they try to tell you you are powerless, remember what Alice Walker says. The biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. We have it. We are going to use it in this election. We are saying no to the lesser evil and yes to the greater good, because we are not only deciding what kind of a world we will have in this election, we are deciding whether we will have a world or not going forward into the future. The day of reckoning is coming closer and closer. On climate change, we are told that there will be a civilization-ending development in the form of massive sea level rise as soon as 2050. Anybody plan to be here in 2050? I think a few of us do, myself included. So we cannot wait, because we have to act now if we want to stop that sea level rise from happening in 2050. We need to declare a state of emergency right now and undertake a wartime scale mobilization to create those 20 million jobs and create that 100% clean energy now. We have a crisis in nuclear weapons, and again, thanks very much to the Democrats. Bill Clinton, who removed us from the anti-ballistic missile treaty framework for nuclear disarmament, and then Barack Obama, who created a $1 trillion budget for us to spend on a new generation of nuclear weapons and modes of delivery. So on the count of climate, on the count of nuclear weapons and this insane nuclear arms race that we are once again headlong plunging into, and on account of these endless and expanding wars that are blowing back at us all around the world, we cannot afford to sit this one out. The lesser evil is a losing strategy, because people stop coming out to vote for lesser evil politicians throwing them under the bus. So the Republicans will win anyhow. And to look at Donald Trump does not stand alone. Donald Trump is about the rise of right-wing extremism, not only in this country, but in Europe. And as Bernie Sanders himself so often said, the only solution to the likes of Donald Trump is a truly radical, progressive agenda that restores our needs and ends the economic misery that promotes the kinds of demagogues we are seeing in Donald Trump. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Hillary Clinton is the problem. She is not the solution to Donald Trump. We are the solution. We are the ones we've been waiting for. This is our moment. Together, we do have the power to create an America and a world that works for all of us. The power to create that world is not just in our hopes. It's not just in our dreams. Right here and now, it's in our hands. We will make this happen together. We are unstoppable. Thank you so much. On we go. Thank you.
You're listening to Pacifica's live coverage of the Green Party National Convention from Houston, Texas. We have about 31 minutes left of airtime before we cede way to your usual programming, whatever that might be, on your Pacifica station or your affiliate. This is Mark Babawi. With me is Ann Garrison. Our producer is Otis McClay. And we have actually four or five guests lined up, but only about 30 minutes of airtime left, so I don't know if we'll get a chance to get to all of them. The first we want to bring on is Adrian Butterera, and Adrian, forgive me if I mispronounce your name. Adrian is field director for the Jill Stein campaign, and we wanted to touch on a few topics. We'll probably only have time for one of them, and that is that the Stein campaign's foreign policy is maybe a little bit different from the other two parties. In lots of different ways. We heard some of that in her acceptance speech. But I wanted to ask you specifically about south of here. Right. Not only Central America, you know, Mexico is in the news a lot. Trump wants to build a wall and so on. But even further south than that, Latin America. How would you characterize the Stein campaign's Latin American policy specifically?
Well, thank you for having me. The Latin American policy is clearly, an extension of what we just heard from Jill in terms of an awareness about the sort of neocolonialist and imperialist role that the United States has played for us because of our commitment to the immigrant worker, to our commitment to sort of changing that paradigm and being able to say, well, you know, let's get at the root causes. So one of the things that we have been working on is just a realization of like how we heard, for instance, in the debate between Bernie and Clinton, we heard they were talking about the Honduran children that were arriving at our shores, you know, at the border, all these children that at the borders, they not once, not even Bernie nor Hillary mentioned like the root cause. What was the root cause?
Yeah, why are they coming?
Why are they coming, right? In other words, why are all these immigrants coming? It's not like people love to leave their homeland and just suddenly find themselves, you know, living sort of under the threat of expulsion and deportation for no reason. And so we have to, the root causes, we know what they are. And with Honduras in particular, you know, we have dire consequences for what Hillary Clinton helped support and Obama supported.
Which was
the overthrow of a legitimately elected government that was working on behalf of the people against the major corporations that were exploiting them, an extension of the United Fruit Company, you know, going back. I mean, this is colonialism that has been entrenched.
Sounds like Cuba in the 30s almost.
No. I mean, this was, I mean, no. I mean, in other words, Dole Corporation is an extension of the United Fruit Company,
right.
and the conditions don't change, and union organizing, you know, it was being punished, and so suddenly our government arises that begins to change things. Next thing you know, there is an overthrow that the United States government refuses to condemn, and the consequences have been horrific. I mean, the assassination of Berta Cáceres, you know, which is how I started my speech at the power rally in Philly, you know, was with a chant like Berta Cáceres presente, and I said that's not something you're gonna hear from Bernie, that's not something you're gonna hear, and we can say that because Jill is committed to that. Jill is committed to arriving at the root causes, creating a relationship with Mexico, Central America, Latin America. There are not gonna be any Operation Condors under our administration, that's for sure. I can guarantee you that.
The Obama administration not only did not condemn the coup in Honduras, they actually recognized the post-coup government as legitimate, which is even one step beyond that.
And they kept providing aid.
Right.
In other words, they did not suspend the aid. So basically...
And there are laws on the books against this.
Well, exactly. You're not supposed to continue to provide, you know, financial aid and military aid to an illegally, but they never denounced the coup. So they never recognized the coup, and that's how they justified, that's how they got around the legal angle.
And will President Jill Stein change our relationship to the Bolivarian Revolution?
100% as part of a very fundamental fact. I mean, it doesn't have to be specific to the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela or to what is happening in Bolivia or what is happening in Ecuador. It's just a radical shift in the very construct of having a relationship of respect and dignity, behaving like a sister nation and not behaving like an empire. Cooperation. Fair trade, treaties and agreements that respect the rights of the workers and the rights of the peasants, you know, and not the benefits. In other words, an international Latin American agreement with whomever wants to come into an agreement where the priority of the agreement is respect for Mother Earth, respect for the rights of the workers, respect for the rights of women, respect for the rights of the indigenous, respect for the rights of children. And that will be across the board. If it doesn't matter who comes on board. So for us, we might just be at the head of the Bolivian revolution of our own here. You know,
yeah.
I guess we have to maybe, you know, talk about Thomas Paine or something. We would call it the Panentist revolution. I'm not quite sure. But
before we got you on the air, Adrian, you mentioned something that I think maybe a lot of people don't know that is worth bringing up, and that is that the Stein campaign met with the Latino caucus.
Yes.
And I don't think that Trump's campaign or Bernie Sanders' campaign or Hillary Clinton's campaign have done that.
No. I mean,
what's the significance?
My huge commitment and the commitment in my relationship with Jill around this has been very, very clear. In other words, we want to continue to be informed by our base. The Latino caucus has each... First of all, it's not a homogeneous community, and luckily we have very broad representation. Guatemalan folks, I mean even American born, but people who come from the Guatemalan experience, indigenous experience, from the Puerto Rican experience, from the Mexican experience, and so we you know, the beauty of this is to have the Green Party Latino Caucus be able to inform the Jill Stein campaign. So right now, for instance, we have a system by which we have a Latino coordinator who's going to be working along with a representative of the Latino caucus to address the issues of this community. So the policies that we're going to take and the way we're going to inform what Jill is projecting and what Jill is putting in as policies is being directly informed from the bottom up through the channels of the party and through the channels of the party from the root and from the community.
And are you having any luck at countering the fear that Donald Trump is probably creating with all this talk of a wall?
I mean, perhaps it explains why. The polls just went up, but as of like, let's say about a few days ago, we were running at about 4% with the Anglo-Saxon community. And we were running at around 7% with the Latino community. So the Latino community is basically embracing our campaign beyond any other group, any other demographic.
Well, Adrian, I would love to give you more time. There's obviously so much more we could cover, but we've only got about 20 minutes left, and we've got to get out of here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate everything you guys have done, and you have a good day.
Thank you for being with us. Okay. That was Adrian Butterera Field, director for the Jill Stein campaign. We're going to shift gears here and go immediately to the phone. We've got a live interview set up with Dar Jamel. He's been on the Pacifica airwaves many, many times. He was an unembedded reporter starting in 2003, noticing, as I did, just how terrible the corporate coverage of the Iraq War was. He's shifted gears in the last couple of years and is now focusing on environmental issues. He joined us on the phone right now, live from Alaska. Dar Jamel, are you there?
I am, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I don't hear him. Can you hear me, Dar?
Can you hear me?
No, I can hear myself. I just can't hear Dar Jamel at all. So we'll see if we can figure that out. Dar's stories have been published on Truthout, the Interpress Service, Tom Dispatch, Sunday Herald, all over the place. His website is darjamail.net. That is DarJamail, darjamail.net. And as I said, he's been focusing for the last two or three years on environmental issues. His coverage of anthropogenic climate disruption, which is a term that he hasn't coined, but is something that he's using extensively, is something that is worth exploring. I still don't hear Dar Jamel. Dar, if you can hear me, say something, and if I can hear you, we'll get you straight back on.
Yeah, hi, Mark. This is
no,
Mark. Can you hear me?
I'm not hearing. I'm not hearing Dar Jamel at all. This is one of the penalties you pay for live radio. Not exactly sure. Are you there, Dar?
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
I'm here.
I hear something. It's a little bit scratchy. If you can hear me, Dar, I wanted to ask you just, we're only going to have time maybe for even one question, and that is what your observations might be on differences, if there are any, between the two so-called main parties and the other parties, the Greens specifically, since we're at the Green Convention, and the Libertarian Party. What is the political landscape in terms of environmental policy looking like, in your opinion?
Yeah, if you can hear me okay, I'll go ahead and start talking about this. I
can hear you, but not very well, but continue. We'll see if we can work it out.
Campaign. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can just about hear you, but I don't know if the sound quality is acceptable for radio. You know, if you don't mind hanging on, Dar, we're going to hang up and call you right back and see if we can get a better connection. And in the meantime, I'll give people just a very brief summary of, you know, where we're at.
Wait, I want to make a point. Can I break in and make a point?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. We talked a lot about Jill and alternative media, but CNN will be giving both Jill Stein and Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party a chance. The CNN Green Town Hall with Jill Stein will be on August 17th.
That is 11 days from now, I believe. And I don't know, Anne, if this is going to be framed in the same way as the Sanders campaign was framed when it started to get some attention from the media of fringe, when are you going to concede? I'd be very curious to see how this gets framed. It's something I'm going to watch very, very carefully.
Do you mean whether or not all the reporters will swarm Jill Stein with the question, are you going to run
Are you Ralph Nader? States?
Yes, are you Ralph Nader? Yeah, with the N-word. You know, Kat said something the other night on Greenwatch, a cable television station here in Houston. She didn't get to say it earlier, but she said, if you want to vote your fears, if you're really afraid of Donald Trump, go ahead. We are going after the people who don't vote, which is the majority.
Right, it is, and that's a depressing reality that it's a majority, and I think it's a testament to the fact that most people don't feel like their vote really matters that much, whether that's because they're already comfortable or because they're cynical about the parties that are available and a perceived sort of lack of choice. I don't know, but it's certainly true that for multiple consecutive elections now, the majority don't turn out to vote.
Well, disengagement is the fundamental reality of American political life that you have to face first off when you talk about it.
Yeah, I've been trying to think about this over the last several weeks in terms of why the turnout in European elections tends to be higher. And part of me thinks that a lot of it has to do with the legacy of World War II, that things changed because of World War II that didn't impact America. There was no massive destruction here at home, and people maybe don't feel as connected to their politics as they might in Europe. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but it's something that political scientists should certainly be researching, because I think low turnouts are bad for everybody, apart from the parties that are running the show.
Well, it's covered like a sports event.
Right.
Every day we hear all about the polls and what would this one have to do to pull ahead in, et cetera, et cetera. And look, professional sports is a lot more exciting.
There's a slight crackling in the background that I can hear. That is Dar Jamel. Hopefully, Dar, if you can just say something, we'll see if I can hear you better this time.
I mean,
nope. I hear a crackle on the line. I think the connection's open, and there's definitely an echo, but the sound quality is not conducive to an interview. Why don't we switch gears, gentlemen, and see if we can maybe get Greg Palast on the line. Dar, if you can hear me, I apologize. We've been dealing with technical issues pretty much all day long, and maybe I'll get you on my show on Monday to talk about this, because I think it's an important topic. In the little bit of time that we've got left, unfortunately, since we're not going to be able to bring you Dar Jamel as hoped, we are now going to try and get Greg Palast on the line. He's an investigative reporter. His news-breaking stories have appeared on BBC, The Guardian, Al Jazeera, Rolling Stone, all over the place. His website is gregpalast.com. He's the author of multiple bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, Vulture's Picnic. You may be familiar with him from the story that I guess brought him to prominence in the U.S. from the year 2000, the basically purge of mostly black and also Latino voters from Florida by Secretary Catherine Harris, who was appointed by George W. Bush's brother Jeb, which ultimately led to the Supreme Court ruling for basically ending the recount and handing the presidency to George W. Bush. It's one of the most important, significant electoral stories, I think, in recent U.S. presidential history. Greg was one of the biggest people breaking it. It was all over the BBC. It was covered a lot on the other side of the Atlantic, not so much on this side, but he came to the attention of Pacifica and covered that in an awful lot of detail. And we're trying to get him on the line, but I don't know if the same technical issue is going to affect us with Greg that affected us with Dar. It seems like we're having some phone issues. Is he there?
Yes, Greg. Mark.
Greg.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm glad you can hear me. The connection isn't great. But I'm glad you can at least hear me.
New York calling.
Yeah, so Greg, I told people who you were, that they can find all your stuff on gregpalast.com, the names of your books and so on. We have time maybe for like maybe one or two questions. I wanted to lead in with the topic that you have followed most closely now for getting on a decade and a half, and that is ballots, counting of ballots, stealing of ballots, purging of voter rolls. Where do you see the differences between the political parties on this issue? And I don't just mean Democrats and Republicans, but the other two that don't get as much mention as well, the Greens and the Libertarians.
Actually, the Green Party in particular has been very important in pushing the issue of fighting voter suppression. Remember, we saw in California, we saw in New York, the Democrats themselves are not above playing games with votes. And in the simple way of, for example, not counting provisional ballots, blocking people with absentee ballots, et cetera. This is a big problem. And I have to say that the Green Party and the Bernie or Bust people and Sanders people have got to hold Hillary Clinton's feet to the fire on this issue. It is mixed. A lot of Democrats have gotten themselves in the position where they don't want minority voters either, who are the targets of vote suppression. For example, in New Mexico, when Al Gore ran against Bush, but it was Kerry versus Gore, there was just a couple thousand vote difference between them in New Mexico. The Democratic Party establishment did not want a review or recount of those ballots in New Mexico. It was the Green Party that went in and actually tried to defend the Democratic Party ballots that had been thrown out by the Republicans. The Democrats didn't send a single lawyer. They didn't send anyone to watch the count. And it was the Green Party, ironically, that was protecting the Democratic Party, because the issue was protecting the votes of Native Americans and protecting the votes of low-income Chicanos. And so you have the unusual situation in which the Green Party has been on the forefront of vote suppression, even though that's saving Democratic Party votes.
Greg, for people who haven't been following this very closely, I mean, to say that vote suppression has to be massive and unprecedented is obviously an overstatement. You've been following this for a long time. What sort of percentage points are we talking about in terms of suppression that could actually swing a vote?
Well, we're talking since when Bobby Kennedy and I did an analysis for statistical analysis for Rolling Stone, we came up with about 5.9 million votes or votes people purged from the voter rolls. It's not 100% Democratic, so you end up with about given about 120 million voters in the election in all, you end up with about a 4 percentage point swing, depending on the state. And what I'm really looking at here is not so much the presidential races, but the really razor-close Senate races that will determine who wins the Senate. We're talking about New Hampshire, Ohio, Florida, Illinois. And these are states where you really have to watch out for voter purges, where you have to watch out for voter suppression. Ohio is horrific. John Husted is a Republican Party hack who is running the vote in Ohio. And we saw what happened in 64. John Kerry lost the presidency because a guy named Blackwell, the Republican Secretary of State, basically, made black people stay in line for 8 hours throughout 135,000 ballots from the black precincts on minor technical points and things like that. So, and we're seeing the new guy has replaced him is at least as partisan, at least as horrific and frightening. And again, it's not even so much the presidential race I'm looking at. In the case of Ohio, you're talking about a very, very close race between the Republican Portman, who's the Republican senator running for re-election, against the Democratic ex-governor Strickland. So basically, vote suppression could determine who controls the United States Senate. It's not just the presidency, believe me. And I think that the Green Party has been unique in being unequivocal about protecting votes, even when they're not its own.
Greg Palast, this is Ann Garrison. A lot of Republican elites are backing Hillary Clinton. Does that mean that the Republicans won't try to steal the presidential election in Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania?
Not in the least. Ohio, well, you just mentioned Ohio and Florida, where they are fighting to the death. Remember, the Koch brothers have said that while they won't back Donald Trump, they've already reserved $160 million worth of advertising time for down ballot, basically the U.S. Senate races. So they are backing Marco Rubio for his return to the Senate in Florida. and they are backing Portman in Ohio, and they're backing Kelly Ayotte, who has refused to endorse Donald Trump. She says she's voting for him, but not endorsing him, whatever that means. And she and Rubio are backed by the number one donor to the Republican Party, Paul Singer. He won't give Trump a dime, but he's made it very clear. But he's just concentrating his money on those down ballot races, and that's where votes are stolen. That's always been true. Has always been true that most ballot theater is a local matter, not who wins the presidency. Even in Florida, when the Republican Party was stealing votes, but not necessarily for George W. Bush in 2000. So it's always a local matter, and the Republican elites are one of the reasons they're not backing Trump is that they're trying to save their Senate candidates by telling them stay away from Donald Trump. That's been the advice of their big donor, Paul the Vulture Singer. So believe me, they're going to be swiping votes left and right. And again, it's not even that Republicans are more likely to steal votes than Democrats. It's a question that the Republicans know it's easiest to steal votes from people of color. When you steal votes of voters of color, you're stealing Democratic votes.
On the phone with us live from New York is Greg Palast. He's an investigative reporter and is putting the final frames to his new film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Greg, I wanted to ask you one final question before we let you go. You've been talking about stealing votes. What's the difference between purging voter rolls and counting or not counting ballots?
Quite a difference. I think that there's been a lot of concentration on people, and there's nothing wrong with it, on how electronic voting machines can be hacked. But understand that most vote theft occurs before anyone gets to vote. It's that you remove millions, literally millions of people from the voter rolls. And people saw this in California when they showed up to vote and their names weren't there. Purging voter rolls is the number one way that you steal votes in America. So people don't even have a chance to cast their ballots, or they get what's called provisional ballots. If your name isn't on the voter rolls, they give you a provisional ballot. I call it a placebo ballot. You get to think you voted, but you haven't. They don't have to count that vote. So that's the big problem. And, like in Florida, black men were called felons, criminals, not allowed to vote, and their only crime was voting while black. So you had thousands of black people not allowed to vote. In Florida now, they're calling people alien voters. And in Texas and in Arizona, they're labeling people as illegal aliens on the voter rolls. And not letting them vote. Now, that's ridiculous. They never arrest these people. It's a crime. It's a false charge, but it does push people off the voter roll. So if your name is, for example, Jorge Rodriguez, yes, your name's on a list of people that were deported because there's a whole bunch of people named Jorge Rodriguez. And they say, well, you're an alien, not an American. And that's a direct attack on Hispanic American voters. And very effective, and so they don't even get the votes. That's the purging of the rolls are really the big untold story, and that's where voters of color have really been crushed in America.
And would you support a constitutional amendment to guarantee the right to vote and do away with all these Byzantine laws in 50 states and many counties?
Well, I would go further. I think you need a Swiss or Brazilian system. Where an Australian system where you have to vote. The law requires you to vote. And plus, even if you had a constitutional amendment saying everyone has a right to vote, they're claiming that all they're doing is removing people who aren't citizens, who don't have a right to vote. And even though it's a lie, or right now I'm doing an investigation for Rolling Stone about the accusation by Donald Trump this past week that people are voting multiple times. So you knock out people named John Washington, who are likely black voters. They say, oh, someone else named John Washington voted in the next town. Well, no, that's just another black man named John Washington. So even with the right to vote in the Constitution, that wouldn't stop all the games. What we need to do is have a culture change. And if we're going to change the Constitution, it should be requiring everyone to vote. And that gives everyone a much more powerful tool.
And then maybe we could finally shift the conversation back to who's counting the votes.
Yeah. And then who's counting the votes, of course, count matters too. I've just told you about that millions, literally millions of people will be given provisional ballots in November. Mostly those will be voters of color. Someone then has to decide whether that vote will be counted or not.
Any tips, Greg, for people going to polling stations given a provisional ballot? What would you recommend that they would do?
Go early, and if they tell you you're not registered, so just take a provisional ballot, say, I want a ballot, so I will come back. If they say you didn't have the right ID, come back with the right ID. If they say you're not registered, go and complain. That's why you should go and vote early. Avoid voting by absentee mail-in ballot because you got the same problem. These same people can decide whether your vote counts. And believe me, millions of absentee ballots are thrown in the garbage. That's official because they're allowed to. You know, you left off your middle initial on a mail-in ballot where you registered with the middle initial. A lot of these states are going to throw your ballot in the garbage, and they have a right to do that. That's why, you know, you've got to fight for your vote and keep checking your registration about once a month, and certainly the couple days before the registration expires. Everyone listening should check their registration by October 15. Don't tell me you voted for 20 years at the same place without a problem. This year, you're going to have a problem, especially if you're a voter of color. You're going to have a problem. Check it out. And like right now, you're sitting in Texas. They've just joined what's called cross-check, a horrific system where they're purging tens of thousands of people in Texas. So look out, look for your vote, protect yourself, man. If you want to vote, it's not easy. It's just waltzing in at the last minute. If there's absolutely no other way to vote than provisionally, don't throw away even a bad ballot if it's the only ballot you've got.
So show up early on election day. Don't vote early by mail.
There's early voting. Almost all states have early voting a week before, 2 weeks before. Go in and vote early.
But not
that's where your early voting station is, and go in and vote early. And then if they say, wait a minute, you're not registered, that gives you time to get registered. Oh, we don't like your ID. That gives you time to get the right ID. I saw that in California. A woman burst into tears. It was 2 hours before the polls closed, and they said that she did not bring in. She had to exchange a ballot. That she didn't, you know, she was trading an independent ballot for a Democratic Party ballot, and she forgot the envelope. She didn't bring the envelope. Who cares? And they said, no, we're not going to let you vote unless you bring back the envelope you were mailed your other ballot in. I mean, this is the type of games that they play, and they're doing it deliberately. And believe me, that's a reason to go in and vote early to find out what dumb excuse they're using to not let Mark Babawi vote this time.
Well, Greg, we're out of time, I'm afraid, but I really want to thank you for joining us. Greg is the author of multiple New York Times bestsellers. I hate to mention the New York Times, but they are bestsellers. And he's an investigative reporter. His work has appeared all over the place. His website is gregpalast.com. And Greg, we're about to be able to watch your new documentary, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Thank you for being on the air with us.
You're the best. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you. We have about, a minute and a half or so to basically remind you that you've been listening to Pacifica's coverage of the Green Party National Convention here in Houston, Texas. We've been with you for almost 4 hours. We're about to wrap up. A lot of people made this possible. There were many challenges faced by the production crew of course, a name that actually hasn't come up but has done a lot of work in the background, Bobby Modad. Otis McClay has been pushing many buttons and dealing with all sorts of issues with the PA system and the telephones. I apologize that we weren't able to get to Dar Jamail, but that's the way it happens. Sometimes sitting next to me is Ann Garrison. Ann, thank you for your contribution as well. Scooter and Stacey Davis did the comedic sketch that you heard. Hopefully you had a sense of humor and took it the way it was intended. If you didn't, sorry. That's the way it works sometimes. Want to also thank Wally James and Bill Crozier for significant audio contributions for recording and interviewing people. The executive director of this whole production is Lydia, and I don't know Lydia in person, so I may say her name wrong, but Lydia Brazone? I got it right. That's all the time we've got just about. We've got about no seconds at all. Thanks for listening. Support Pacifica. Support your local station and affiliate. Keep this kind of radio on the air as long as you can. I think now is when we need it more than ever.